Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing on this bright, sunshiny day? Well, it was.
Well, it's kind of overclouded right now, and temperature's kind of dropping, but it's still a lovely evening. It's overcast out this way, they tell me, in western Minnesota. But I understand we have a candidate who comes out of the Congressional District 3, Eric Paulson. Is that her? She's the challenger, so that he is the incumbent. Is that correct?
Yes.
All
we
right.
Have
well, why don't you introduce our guest, and we can talk in terms of what her platform is, some of her thinking on some of the issues.
Yes, I'd like to welcome a candidate for Congressional District 3 running against Eric Paulson, Ms. Sharon Sun. And if you don't know Congressional District 3, that consists of Bloomington to the south, Eden Prairie, Edina, Maple Grove, Plymouth, Minnetrista, Wash, Wayzata in the west, and with blue-collar workers, and this is kind of the explanation that they have online, Brooklyn Park and Coon Rapids to the north. So this is considered one of the richest districts in Minnesota as far as the wealth index goes. Ms. Sun, welcome to the Ron and Don Show.
Well, thank you, Ron and Don. It's great to be on with you.
Okay, I want to start out by asking you, where are you originally from? And we'll start with that. Where are you originally from?
Well, I grew up in the military. My dad was a 20-year military veteran, and I ended up going to high school in Memphis after he retired, and I moved up here to become a scientist. I went to McAllister and got my degree in chemistry and biology, and I've actually worked for a Fortune 500 company as a manager at a Fortune 500 company, but I've also done research in renewable energy.
Okay, I guess what I want to know is what led you to run in the 3rd Congressional District that has been secured by Eric Paulson since, 2008? I mean, what was the motivation behind it?
Well, the motivation is that I didn't like the way he was voting. And I went to his office many times to talk to him and reason with him and say, as a citizen of this district, I believe that there are better ways to better policies that we need to get implemented. And the way he was voting, I believed, was making it more and more difficult for working families, the average person, to make progress. And I couldn't get through to him in any way. I felt like I wasn't listened to, I wasn't heard. And I went to his office once, and there was a group of seniors there, and we went to talk to him about, I don't know if you're familiar with the Ryan budget, but in the Ryan budget, that's where the Republicans mapped out their plan for the future of our country, and it had, basically, it was cut investment in education, cut investment in infrastructure, cut investment in research and development, and voucherize Medicare, put Social Security on the stock market. So that was his recipe for our country, and I went there with seniors who were distraught about this, and after meeting with him, they asked me to go and have coffee with them. And they said, you know what, you talk well. You could speak for me. And that was a few years ago, and a number of other things happened. But that was the start of my running. And I just quickly, the other thing that I got involved in working in my community after my son with who has disabilities was born, and I had been very involved in corporate America and out working hard, making a living, living the dream. And after my son was born, I began to work with, I was asked to be a parent representative for the West Suburban Early Intervention Program. And I began to work in the community. And I saw firsthand the need of investing in our families and our communities, and particularly by protecting Social Security and Medicare. I believe it's the right thing to do, and I do not believe that it's something that will bankrupt our country. I believe it's something that will make it better, and there's a way that we can do it, and if we want to do it, we can do it, and we can do it well.
Okay, let me ask you, what are your views on the role of government?
Well, I believe that government should be there to help develop the potential of its people, to protect its people, and to allow the potential of its people to grow and flourish and develop. And that way, when you allow for the development of the potential of your people, and then you can set up structures. For instance, I talked about research and development, investing in research and development, and our entrepreneurs then take the results of that research and create businesses, and from those businesses, people get jobs, and we grow our economy that way. When we invest in our people, our communities, that's when we can accomplish great things. I believe that government works on the premise of we're all in this together, and it's who we are together and how we can go forward together.
Okay. Mr. Edwards, do you have any questions?
Well, certainly. I have a couple of questions. Let me give her a two-part question challenger. Of course, all of the political world is talking about the primary elections last night. Number one, give us your take on the defeat of Majority Leader Eric Cantor of Virginia. And secondly, what positions have you crafted out as it pertains to immigration reform?
Well, one thing I think it's exciting, and it's exciting when I think of $200,000 versus $5 million. That's good news for the people of our country, because it says what I've been saying a lot of, it's not just about the money. Now I need money to run this campaign, and I invite all of your listeners to go to votesharonson.com and make a generous contribution, because we do need those dollars. But it's the way the Supreme Court has been ruling that corporations are people and they can give as much money as they want, and this is outrageous. But what's exciting is that when people come together and they say no to the powers that be and no to the big money interests, the defeat of Eric Cantor says that people, now I don't agree with the politics of those that defeated him, but I do agree with the people that it is the people of Virginia's right to decide, and when they come together and work together, regardless of that big money, they can win. And so that's really, really exciting. Immigration and... immigration reform. There's one thing that I would like to see in immigration, a number of things, but one thing that's happening is that our companies need skilled workers And a lot of them have been come to the United States, get their education. They come from other countries. And we invite them to be a part of our country, part of our economy, and we give them citizenship. And what I'm hearing is that when many of them come, they come with children, wives and children. And their children oftentimes are not afforded the same opportunity of citizenship. And those are the types of things that we need to address in our immigration policy. And so regardless, we have Eric Cantor, they're saying that he lost because of his policies. I would contend that it may not have been immigration that caused him to lose. It may have been his wishy-washiness and his not taking a stand for immigration that caused him to lose.
All right. How do you view this, the energy policy of the Obama administration, because you talked in terms of renewable energy and et cetera. I mean, what position will you bring to the Congress as it pertains to the whole issue of renewable energy, as well as the debate over nuclear, over coal, over the environment? Give us some of your thinking along those lines.
Well, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to talk about that, because I think it's one of the exciting things that it's also one of the unfortunate decisions that we've made in our government, because 30 years ago we knew that we needed to invest in renewables. I worked for Bill Norris, who was the founder of Control Data Corporation.
Control Data, yes. Mm-hmm.
And you know, great entrepreneur, great mind. And his belief over 30 years ago was that the future of the American economy was in renewables.
Mm-hmm.
And he pushed and he talked about that and he fought for it and he got pushed down and with Ronald Reagan. And as a matter of fact, we had solar panels on the White House, because 30 years ago we knew, we said we've got to do something about climate change, about the scientists were starting to talk about it back then. And that, and in addition to that, oil was we were getting held hostage by oil, and we needed to get out of that, and we knew that. We didn't make the decision back then. But now we have the opportunity once again, because and why I say it's exciting is because we can build a strong economy. We still have that opportunity. We just have to have the backbone and the will to stand up to the people that are saying don't do it, because they have financial interests in us not doing it. But we have to think about our people. We have to think about the children. We have to think about our future. And 97% of scientists from all diverse disciplines say that there is climate change happening and that there's a human factor involved.
And that human factor is what?
That we're putting pollutants into the air. I'm a scientist. Look, you cause and effect. We're putting pollutants into the air, right? Coal particles. They can't escape. They go into air, the sunlight comes down, it reflects back. Usually that heat from the earth escapes out into the atmosphere. But what happens is when you have the coal particle, the particles from the pollution in the air, the heat reflects back down to the earth and then has to get absorbed and stays in the earth.
That's part of our concern about the ozone layer? Is that where you're kind of directing some of that?
Well, the ozone area, the exciting thing, the ozone, is we, many years ago, we realized that we were impacting our ozone with fluorocarbons, and we did something about it. And we know now that the ozone is not that ozone layer is not getting worse. So it's a similar thing, but the particles, the carbon, the pollution from the the burning of coal and the use of fossil fluid, fossil fuels is getting into the air. And another unfortunate thing is the heating of our atmosphere because of that, and the melting of our
ice polar cap.
Is releasing more methane into the air, and that carbon going into the air is getting into the air is causing more and more heat to be retained in the earth. And so we do need to do as much as we humanly can. And one of the things that we can do is we can start getting off of the burning of the fossil fuels in order to generate heat, energy. And when we go to these to renewables, we can do that in a way that creates local jobs that don't get outsourced. And these are good jobs, jobs in manufacturing of renewable and, or production of renewable. When we go to some of the energy sources. And
can you give
us
a number on that? Do you have, as a candidate and a challenger to Eric Paulson, do you have a number when you start talking in terms of jobs that could come out of or emanate out of, quote-unquote, a change in our policy with regards to energy? Do you have a number? I mean, we're talking 5,000, 15,000, 100,000.
Well, new jobs here
in Minnesota? I mean, what's our number?
Well, right. It depends on our commitment. And say, for instance, like I was in Israel a number of years ago, and I asked, well, what's that on the top of your house? On every house in Israel, they had a unit for a renewable storage unit where they put on the top of every house. So if every house in our district in our country had a renewable energy source on it, how many jobs would it take to build those units? How many jobs could we create to install those units? How many jobs do we create to maintain those units? How many jobs does it take to build the infrastructure, the utility infrastructure, to capture the excess energy so that it can be transmitted to the next plant that can be used for that? We're talking about many, many, many jobs of all sorts that can be created. We can create thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs if we do that. We talked about what was the WPA that created so many jobs that pulled us out of the Great Depression. Well, imagine doing this type of effort and taking that money right now that we give away to oil.
All right. I have one final question, and I'll hand back off to.
All right. I get excited about this stuff because I can understand.
Let me ask you a question though. When we start talking about jobs, because we've had a lot of discussion here in the 5th congressional district, and there's currently discussion out in the 3rd congressional district, the area that you're contesting for, with regards to light rail and et cetera. How would you encourage meaningful and honest enforcement and monitoring of employment for people of color?
Okay. You went from light rail. Now say that again.
Okay, let me go back. We're a couple of projects, and this program has been in the forefront of raising serious questions about the authenticity and the credibility. We oftentimes hear about public works projects is what they are, be it the Viking Stadium or be it light rail and et cetera. And so the African-American community finds itself being tantalized with discussions about, you know, this will bring forth jobs, employment, and et cetera. Well, okay, that's great. When the project is completed, and if you're able to get your hands on the statistical data about the awarding of contracts, the employment of people, and et cetera, there are no African Americans or people of color anywhere to be found. And so it's kind of become a art in this state that, well, we'll do it better the next time around. Right now we have two major projects. The light rail in St. Paul was a disaster for African Americans, basically unemployed. Viking Stadium, same situation. My question to you as Congresswoman from the 3rd Congressional District, how would you assure the population that has been most neglected, unfortunately, that there will truly be opportunity, and that when there is not opportunity, there will be consequences for those entities, government or private, that made promises and commitments and didn't keep them?
Well, yeah, that's a big concern, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean it's a problem, and what comes to mind when you're talking about those opportunities, the need for jobs, and perhaps it sounds like to me you're saying there is some unfairness in the system, where
more than a little.
where those opportunities are not being afforded to certain groups of people, and the question becomes why is that? What is happening that that we're not seeing those jobs, the access to those jobs
materialize? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
True, exactly.
Okay.
And one of the first things is that there has to be a will. We have to have a will to open access up to.
What about the existence of the law? What about the current laws that are on the books?
Let me talk about
equity and such things as that. What about those laws?
Right. Yeah, unfortunately, even the laws that are on the books, my understanding is that oftentimes they're not enforced because there's this belief in scarcity. There's this belief that there's not enough pie to go around, and because of that, some people have to be left out in order for some to get.
I'm going to close it off. Hand you back to Mr. Allen. I have to tell you, Ms. Sun, that clearly is not the American way. But I appreciate your candor and your response to my question.
It's not the American way to believe that there's not enough pie. I think that there is enough. I think that we have to expand the pie, and we have to get to the place where we believe that every person has the potential, and that's it goes back full circle to where we started this conversation, and that government, what is government's role? It's not to discriminate from one to another. The government's role is to develop its people, the potential of its people, and to accept that everyone has something to offer.
Okay.
And to
Do you think there's opportunity, though, for partnership between the government and private sector, big corporate?
Should there be?
Do you think there is?
Well, there
are. Or should there be?
Partners.
Is there? Should there be? Can there be?
Yeah, there is, there should be, there can be.
Okay.
Yeah, there should be partnership. There should be, but government should be there primarily, and its primary role of government should be to serve its people.
Mm-hmm.
It's for the people. Government for the people, by the people. And
let me say this in closing. Again, appreciate your candor as a candidate. A thing called contract compliance has been the law of the land since 1964, and here we are 50 years later trying to figure out why it is that the doors of opportunity have not been opened for some class of Americans. Isn't that troubling?
It is troubling.
Yeah,
it is troubling.
So.
And you know why it's troubling? I want to say this. You know, when we talk about the jobs that can be created with renewables, we build a bigger pie when we believe that we can do it, and so we need to be creating policies to make that pie bigger so that everyone has that opportunity to get those jobs and to build their future. When we talk about education and we talk about the gaps, we find that the people that are struggling the worst in schools are the ones at the lower who have lower income people, kids, from those homes. Those are where the gaps are. You start making sure that those families have access to good jobs, then you start seeing automatically there that those gaps start decreasing.
All right. All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Mr. Allen, turn it back over to you, sir.
Yeah.
I know we have some callers waiting.
Yes, we do. We do have a caller waiting, but before we get there, Ms. Harris, I'm very concerned about something here because if, Ms. Sun, if you're running for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District, I would suggest that you familiarize yourself with CFR 49 Part 26, which is a disadvantaged business enterprise that has been on the books for probably more than 40 years now. And Mr. Edwards has spoke about contract compliance and people not getting jobs. And what you've talked about has been talked about in 2006, 2008, 2010, 2012, the sustainable energy, the jobs, et cetera, except it's never really came to fruition at this point. So I guess my last question to you, if there is a American and a immigrant, who should get the job?
Well, if there's an American and an immigrant, who should get the job?
That's the question.
Now, is the immigrant a United States citizen?
He's an immigrant.
Well, so you're saying that there's discrimination on the job, that they're looking at a person and saying, okay,
I'm looking at
their qualifications, so their qualifications are all the same, and who should get the job?
It's not really what I'm saying, but I just asked a question. If there's an American and there's an immigrant, who should get the job?
And they're equally qualified. Maybe you need to put it like that, Mr.
Okay,
they're equally
qualified.
They have the same academics, the same experience, and et cetera. Who should get preference?
Well, that's an interesting question. So the immigrant came here legally. Has been working and was invited perhaps to come here or came here because they wanted to see opportunity for their family, and there's only one job, who should get the job?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a really – and you asked this because now you started off with this conversation.
In wrapping up here, I ask you this question because the Obama administration has deported more foreigners than any other presidential administration. I mean, more than Bush, more than Reagan, more than, you know, anybody going back. And here locally, we have congressional candidates, including Eric Paulson, who's the incumbent, and Congressman Keith Ellison, and others who say that, hey, this is not going to happen. We're not going to do this in Minnesota. But yet you see total businesses closed down and these immigrants, you know, deported. So I ask you that question because it's part of the fairness doctrine here. Well, Mr. Edwards had said, you know, like 3-4 minutes into the conversation before that, you know, people in your district might be poor. They might be of color, but they're not getting the opportunities. There are some systemic reasons for that, and we're trying to see as journalists and examiners if you're clear on that and you're running for Congress out there against Eric Paulson, and a lot of those people right now are listening to this broadcast. We put it out everywhere that you were going to be on tonight. And so that's why I asked that question. Really no hidden motivation. It's just that, you know, this is going to be easy. What they have out there might not be that easy. But we'd like to thank you for joining us tonight. We greatly appreciate it, and we'll expect the update here in the fall, if possible.
And I want to say this, that I believe that, you know, what President Obama is doing is he's saying he's supporting the law, and we need to follow the law in terms of compliance, you know, in terms of making sure people comply. I'm not saying that we don't need to follow the law. I'm saying that in addition to that, we also need to have the will to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to have a good, high-quality job, regardless and of who you are. And when
all
we
right.
do, that's
okay.
the basis of our of
all right.
building.
It has been an excellent 30 minutes, and we appreciate
all
you
right.
taking
well,
the time
you.
Of
thank
joining
you.
Us.
Thank
and,
you.
I look forward to talking with you again.
All
right.
Thank you
very much.
Mm-hmm.
Have a great
bye
night.
Bye.
Okay. All right, Mr. Allen. Well, we've got a half hour left. You said we have someone. Is it in the queue or waiting on the line or what?
Oh, they're on the line now, calling from the East Coast.
Okay.
The person
put the call
guest.
Through.
See,
mm-hmm.
They're live on the air.
Okay.
Hi. Well, how you doing?
Hi, caller. How you doing? You're calling us from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Is that correct?
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I was sad to hear on Monday a young lady from Minneapolis, Minnesota was tased by a police officer when she called the cops. And so the information was, like, vague, but I did some further research. And so when I turned on Black Radio, I found out that if that is true. So I said, wait a minute, it doesn't sound correct. So I called up to Ron Edwards, who I have a relationship when we lived out in Minnesota about 10 years ago. We still always kept the relationship. Mr. Edwards, what's going on? You know, he said, I never heard of this. And I said, never
That's
heard
correct.
Of this.
That's correct. That's right. Yeah.
They're speaking about it on the radio here, and but you never, are you sure? Then, you know, after back and forth, we connected and found out that it verified it was correct. But it was amazing that I am, what, 1,500 miles away? How many states we're apart? And they're talking about something in a state, and the residents doesn't know. It's something appalling about that the Black community, especially leadership, that this is not on a front burner.
Well, let me respond because immediately upon the call from you in Philadelphia, and we also had concurring information from CBS as an example, and then later we found the video from Fox 9, which is KMSP here in Minneapolis, Channel 9, and it allowed us to do a real examination. One of the things that had happened, it was shown on the evening of the 4th, but it was only shown once, and we had another situation like that just earlier in the week where a young 14-year-old African-American young lady was jumped on by a mob in a park here in North Minneapolis because of misinformation. But we had a chance to examine, and so we were able to do some additional follow-up, and a number of things started emerging. Number one, the video of the actual altercation and the 19-year-old African-American woman who was 6 months pregnant, being tasered, knocked to the ground, and et cetera. Actually, she went unconscious. She actually went unconscious and actually fell forward, landing on her stomach, which certainly is not the best situation for a woman in the 6 month of her pregnancy. A couple things we found out so that our listening audience can be up to date on it. Number one, the videotape, which actually was the property of the Metro Transit Police and the Metro Transit Authority, was actually confiscated, according to KMSP, from the camera. They got to the camera first, and consequently the Transit Authority police, who did not appear to be involved in the tasering, indicated they could not respond to any questions about the young lady, Mrs. Trout, if I'm not mistaken, and that they would all inquiries would have to be made to the Minneapolis Police Department. Well, KMSP reported, as well as we then raised the question to the Minneapolis Police Department, and were told that the matter was under investigation and there would be no further statements until the completion of the investigation. Now, the young lady was arrested also and charged with obstructing a police officer in the performance of their duty, if you will. And so that is the status. Now, in the meanwhile, there has been no expression of concern from the leadership here in our beloved city. The ecumenical community hadn't said anything, NAACP Urban League, the powerful leadership council, which is headed, actually still headed by the husband of the mayor of our city, who is also the number two man at one of the most powerful foundations here in the state of Minnesota, the Northwest Area Foundation. And so even this late this afternoon, both Mr. Allen and I have made inquiry of sources available, and we were basically told, Carla, that this was not a priority issue, not a priority civil rights issue or issue of any kind.
I don't mean to interrupt, but it's amazing. Mm-hmm. I was on a call, on the line waiting, and I was listening. I don't know if she's a U.S. congresswoman or if she's running.
She's running, uh-huh.
She's running, but it's amazing that they should give them some political science 101, a dummy political science course, so they can be more informed, because if she's still informed and win, how can she represent? They can speak for people who have no vested interest in the United States and came here immigrants or illegal, but those who built the country, the railroads, we're still fighting for representation.
You know, I can't argue with that. Fighting. I wouldn't argue with that. Right, right.
We're still fighting for representation. And it's amazing. We had a civil rights bill. We have the Board of Education. And we're still fighting for fair housing, fair
yes.
education, contracting opportunities. They just totally, totally dismissing us. And most of all, the dummy down, I call them politicians. They call black politicians because they're not politicians, because they're up for tricks and treats. They're not here to serve the community. They get positions, and they do not have a vested interest in the community. They have no desire to have a vested interest in the community. You know.
Well,
they,
that sounds like Shangri-La, which is our code name for the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul. Mr. Allen and I both, upon examination as journalists of the incident, were really surprised at the kind of low-key, well, you know, not my daughter, she shouldn't have fought with the police. She didn't fight with the police. She, in fact, made the 911 call as she was being attacked and there was an attempt to take her property, her purse, and a jacket from her. There are witnesses who are on the video from KMSP, Channel 9, which clearly indicate, in fact, the young lady in question was struck first, Mr. Allen, by one of the crowd or group that was attempting to rob her, and a girl actually slapped her, in the face and et cetera, and I guess that would cause some kind of response from a person.
Oh, yeah.
But, it happened, and as I said, I'd like to tell you that civil rights leaders have demanded and had a meeting with the mayor and the chief police and et cetera. They said they don't have time to do that right now. They're trying to get contracts and monies off of a couple big projects here, so they don't have time. And then they've got a retreat coming up where they have been ordered by the two United States senators here in Minnesota to go into a retreat and come back with a declaration that will make the white population feel more safe, because we've had just a preponderance of violence and shootings and et cetera in this city. In fact, we've had probably 40 straight nights of shootings, people being shot, killed, wounded, and et cetera. I mean, it's on level with Chicago in a proportional way. So we, Mr. Allen and myself, unless Mr. Allen just is receiving some text which indicates that a meeting was held with the mayor and the council president, et cetera, leadership said they really don't have time right now to deal sure. with that issue of a 19-year-old African-American woman, 6 months pregnant, being tasered, knocked unconscious, and then arrested and charged with obstruction and interference with a police officer.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Edwards. And the Minneapolis Urban League's Scott Gray said, quote, "I didn't hear about that."
Yeah.
That Scott Gray seems like the leadership of the NAACP, or lack of leadership of the NAACP in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who has, by the way, housing from Temple University, which is free housing, but they couldn't provide any meetings because they didn't pay the electric or gas.
Oh.
You said they didn't do what?
They didn't pay the electric or gas.
And they were getting free rent?
They were
this
free
is the NAACP of Philadelphia, Greater Philadelphia?
Greater Philadelphia, the NAACP. Matter of fact, these are, if I'm not mistaken, Jerry Montesai, which is the president, who's been the president for maybe 15 years for the Philadelphia chapter. He's also state chapter president. And they're thinking about what we're in 2014, 2015, holding a convention. But however, the NAACP cannot get a venue that will sponsor them unless they pay in advance.
That's an outgrowth of what happened to them down there in Houston when they forgot to pay their bills a couple years ago when they had their national conference.
The thing is, Malcolm X said, when white America get a cold, black America get pneumonia. And I think we passed pneumonia. The way African Americans treat one another is borderline demonic. We have organizations that they're lack of organizations because they're not ran by people that look like us. You know, we have an NAACP that is non-effective. They're not worth the ink that they're written on.
Okay. Well, that sounds like us up here, like I said. And Mr. Allen is quoting a statement by the chief staff person/president of the Urban League of Minneapolis, and he said he didn't hear anything about it. We talked about it on my television program here in Minneapolis. We talked about it on our different websites, Mr. Allen and I. And I couldn't find anybody that seemed to have any concern with regard. In fact, there's some question if, in fact, the fetus is going to be able to go full term. Taser, that's quite a shock to the neural system. Dead weight, unconscious, onto your stomach, as the young lady did, you know, it just compounds, quote unquote, the possible damage to the fetus and full guarantee of full term. But we just can't find people that are, you know, people here just saying, well, that's you know, unfortunate. She should have yielded to the police. Of course, when you ask them what happened, why was the police called, they can't tell you. But
you know,
she called the police because she was being robbed.
It's amazing when black people are offended, they have to yield. When white people like George Zimmerman, he has to be aggressive.
Yes. And by the way, we to the west of us here, we see that we're probably not be able to get into a lot of it, but I received a text from some of our friends, Billy Bob, out in Idaho, indicating the revolution is here. And after what happened in Vegas, you would think that folks would start fessing up to the fact that not every potential terrorist in America wears a beard, wears a turban, or looks like a black person.
Exactly.
Oops. Yeah, that's how Mr. Wilcox lost his life inside the Walmart. He did not realize that the blonde-haired white woman standing next to him was a terrorist. And as he drew his weapon to confront her husband, she blew him away.
And it's
we appreciate the call out of Philadelphia. We would have hoped that we would have had better information for you, but our role is to be factual and truthful, and there's just no concern or interest amongst leadership with regards to the unfortunate situation surrounding the tasering of a 19-year-old, 6-month pregnant African-American woman because she made the mistake of doing as the system says. She called 911, the police arrived. First black thing they saw was her, and that's who they tasered. All right, thank you for calling, and we deeply appreciate it. All right.
Okay, have a good day.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Allen, in fact, give our number there, so in case there's anyone that has any additional questions of us. Similar program almost last week as a 14-year-old African-American child was beaten into unconsciousness, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I called upon our leadership to at least by the next morning, asked for a meeting with the mayor and the chief and et cetera, And, of course, you know, their kind of response was is that you don't dictate to us the powerful leadership. Oh, by the way, on that particular note, Mr. Allen, give that number because we got an interesting piece of information. Give our number. Phone lines are open.
Wide open, 347-426-3904. That number, call in right now, 347-426-3904. Go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
Tomorrow sometime, probably early in the morning, Minnesota Public Radio, NPR, Curtis over there, will be breaking a story that the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department and the city of Minneapolis were forced to settle a lawsuit by a Caucasian woman charging hostile work environment, discrimination based on sex, gender, and et cetera. And it looks like probably as much as a $50,000 payout, and this is one of the fastest settlements that's been seen in modern times. But she is a East Indian, if you will. I do believe she may be from Bangladesh, a lawyer. She's a lawyer. Came over to the Civil Rights Department just after Michael Brown. You remember Michael Brown?
Oh, yeah.
Went to work for the department. She previously was at the State Human Rights Department. I thought she knew Velma well. But came under attack, persecution, et cetera, gave testimony during the reappointment hearing of Velma Corbell, the powerful director of Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, if you will. She and a Caucasian woman talked in terms of the atmosphere, the environment, and et cetera. In fact, the city ordered that a consultant be hired to come in and to try to get things straightened out. But anyways, Minnesota Public Radio will be announcing in the morning that there has been a settlement by the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department for acts of discrimination against employees. Isn't that fascinating?
That is just incredible, incredible. That,
yeah. Also, let me report, I've been asked by black law enforcement here in the Twin Cities to at least report that the Lieutenant Michael Keith manifesto, the lawsuit that he filed 6 years ago on behalf of himself and black police officers who he had been with and served with and et cetera, it's a six-year lawsuit. He was demoted, if you remember, he was demoted from lieutenant to sergeant because he stood up for his rights and the rights of African Americans. That led to the destruction for our international and national listening audience. Our Black Police Officers Association here in Minneapolis was destroyed as an outgrowth of that. Anyways, Mr. Allen, on the 21st of May, just a couple weeks ago, the district court here in Hennepin County, state district court, ordered that the document manifesto be released. I myself did not even know that it was this many pages.
Mm-hmm.
4,000 page document.
Wow.
4,000 page document for the listening audience. The document, experts are indicating that it reflects one of the worst police, public safety, and political corruptions of any department anywhere in the United States, if you will. It led to one, in fact, at that time, the most senior African-American officer in the department was railroaded and was sentenced to 1 year in the federal penitentiary because of information that was manufactured by his commanding officer, who is white, who, by the way, has bailed out of the department, will be leaving the department at the end of this month to go to work for the University of Minnesota. It is... Let me tell you how it is, and then, you know, phone lines are open. Anybody got a question, feel free to call us. One African-American officer, I will not name that officer as a part of an agreement reached with the officers in question. One black officer who was never cited for anything and et cetera, but was blasted by the Star Tribune and by his fellow white officers as a criminal, a drug dealer, and et cetera, and et cetera, and et cetera. He acquired his portion of the 4,000 pages. He is named in 400 pages. He is named as a part of the conspiracy to destroy black police officers in this department, right? The Star Tribune has made a political decision, Mr. Allen, to our listening audience, that they will not write any aspect this 4,000-page report, and one of the reasons is there are serious questions about, quote-unquote, the role of the Star Tribune in helping and aiding and abetting the destruction of the Black Police Officers Association, the black officers who were being cited, who, by the way, five of those officers received a $750,000 settlement from the city of Minneapolis a couple years ago. And, of course, Michael Keith turned down at least a $2 million settlement because he wants this matter to go to court.
Mm.
So what has been happening is that the city was attempting to redact as many names as they could from this 4,000-page report, but the court has ruled that the names that have already been redacted cannot be discussed, okay? But I just thought people should know is that this is a 4,000-page report. It contains depositions, including Chief Tim Dolan. It includes wiretaps and et cetera that were discussed under color of law, illegal wiretaps of black police officers and et cetera, as well as Lieutenant Michael Keith, who is a Caucasian. Corrupt activity by white officers of the BOTEC unit, the Violent Offenders Task Force, which initiated this conspiracy in 2003 against black officers and et cetera. I tell you, Don, it is a frightening document. But again, 4,000 pages of some of the juiciest stuff you'd ever want to know. You know, I have to say this because I did do due diligence. There is a significant piece in how a Pacific civilian Caucasian police employee was set in place to try to discredit and destroy a member of the Minneapolis City Council who was an African-American. It clearly wasn't Don Samuels. It was Ralph Remington. And as you remember, Mr. Remington, in just anger and frustration, what he saw happen, though he could have won a second, probably third term, you remember he left the city council after one term and went to work for the Obama administration. So anyways, I just think it's important that we just let folks know that this manifesto is out there. I repeat again, Mr. Allen, I mean, it makes for juicy reading.
Mm-hmm.
4,000 pages. Okay?
Wow. That's like, sound like I get a hold of a copy of that.
You'll have a hard time, probably, because the city, I think the city is saying they're going to be charging, I think, $75 to $1 a page.
Wow. Okay, I'm not about, I better wait for it to come out on Netflix or something. Yeah, that's expensive. That's expensive as heck. Yeah, I got to get my free copy on that one. But, yeah, that should be pretty interesting. And Mr. Edwards, you know, I'm getting lots of texts. I know people are listening. We have 95 people in the chat room, and no one's really picked up a phone, but everyone seems to be on the common thread about, you know, why haven't our African-American leaders been saying anything? And, I'm telling you, I'm saying, well, you know, someone's going to have to step up and be a leader and call, you know, besides us. It seems like, Mr. Edwards, every week that we put this out there, that we say, you know, there's no meetings with the mayor. And if there is meetings with the mayor, it's about getting some money. And it's really funny because, you know, Mr. Edwards, there's an ongoing happening going with a gentleman that we know that owns a business in Richfield who sent letters to all the Hennepin County commissioners and some black leaders. Do you know one African-American leader that he thought was his good friend opened the letter and then marked it return to sender, so it was sent back?
No.
Yes.
Return to sender.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. You could tell the envelope was open. He brought me the envelope and says, look at this. You know, I sent it over to this guy. We're in the same business. He reads the letter and then has it sent back to me, return to sender. You know he's bought and paid for. And that was a dirty, rotten shame, you know, when I saw that. It kind of made me pissed off a little bit, and I'm going to wait till after next week's press conference to blast this person out of the water. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But it is true, Mr. Edwards, Scott Gray, Minneapolis Urban League. I didn't know about that. The girl getting beat up, young lady getting beat up because of the foul process in North Common last week. I've talked to several key African-American spokespersons. I can't call them leaders anymore. Just spokespersons.
Yeah.
And I'm telling them, I'm in the University of Minnesota talking to this one gentleman. And I said, hey, you know, I said, this is going on. And he's looking at me, oh, really? When did that happen? You know? And I'm like,
wow.
How out of touch can you actually be? And this week, I mean, since last Thursday to today, Mr. Edwards, it proves to me that these folks are so out of touch that it's shameful.
Oh, man.
It's shameful. And they don't want to deal with anything, but there's a scenario behind it. Okay, and we have to look at the political scenario. I know people are tired of me saying this, but I got to say this. These people are each other's friends. Okay, they travel, and Minnesota's little. They travel in the same political circles. They're going to see these people at the DFL caucus, the DFL night out, the DFL this or DFL that. Now, if these people were to stand up against Superintendent Bernadette Johnson of Minneapolis School, Velma Corbell, the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, Gary Cunningham, Northwest Area Foundation, or his wife, Mayor Hodges, and tell them that they're not doing the right thing, that there's no opportunity provided to these young African-American boys like the Neighborhood Youth Corps that, you know, I had a job when I was a kid from 14 till I was 18 years old every summer to go out and act the fool, okay?
Yeah.
Until these people stand up and say, okay, this is business, this is not personal, that you need to create opportunities. And then you got some of the academy, OI, sitting over there training people right into unemployment.
Yeah,
you know,
but Don, you're breaking up just a tad. You may want to adjust
your dials there.
You're breaking up because we don't want the folks to miss this.
No.
Of course, these programs are available on demand. We found out that there had been some technical problems, but Mr. Allen has. I think we're moving to correct it, and all of the programs will be found in sequential order. Is that correct?
Yes, they're all in sequential order right now. This one will be the next one up. You go
okay.
to blogtalkradio.com/TheRonAndDonShow, and you just look right down and you see them in order. So the next one that you'll see will be this show right here, this Today's Show. And we were the topic of today's show, you know, we had Miss Sharon Sun come on kind of last minute. But we're talking about, you know, Mr. Edwards, I felt really, and we might have to go. I said it to go 10 minutes over, if you didn't mind.
Go right ahead.
I felt very uncomfortable going downtown in my military fatigue shorts and my green shirt and my tennis shoes. I felt that I was being looked at strangely, and I'm usually not paranoid, don't give a damn what other people do. And a lot of law enforcement on downtown keying in on African-Americans, people on the corner, homeless African-Americans, homeless Native Americans. The Native Americans are really getting bad stick down there.
Yes,
and
they are.
It seems to me that, you know, something's going on downtown that's a prelude to the All-Star game, but furthermore, they're setting a template and a model for the upcoming Super Bowl. To get rid
in 2018. Here in Minneapolis, for our listening audience domestically, internationally, we have created, and the Civil Liberties Union, by the way, folks need to know this, have filed a lawsuit in the federal courts. We are sitting up here in our beloved enclave, clean zones, what are called clean zones. And the clean zones are being crafted in such a way as to basically declare that African-Americans, particularly young African-Americans, male and female, are persona non grata as it pertains to be in these clean zones. Now, the one for both the Major League All-Star Game, which will be here the 15th of July, and the Super Bowl, which will be here January of 2018, what has basically already been declared is that the clean zone area will be at least 2 miles in parameter and diameter, if you will. And so African-Americans who – maybe what we can do by then is go to the old South African system of pass cards. Oops. And if, you know, you have a pass, if you will, and identification, you may be able to languish in the area, preferably if you have a job, which – not many black folk got jobs in downtown Minneapolis. But that's one of the things that also is kind of being discussed, is that there be a picture recognition document that so, in fact, one of the statements was made is that we don't want these, well, Negroes. I don't like to use the other word. We won't have to listen to these Negroes bitching about the fact that they really cannot come into downtown unless they have legal reasons. Now, I would suggest for those that are in the legal profession, you may want to read the brief filed by the American Civil Liberties Union about a month ago. And in fact, I know for a fact that they met with so-called African-American leaders and asked for some support, and the leaders told them they'd get back to them. That was over a month ago. So the document, the brief, has been filed in the federal district court. For those that are law professors, law students, lawyers, and et cetera, it's interesting reading because I do feel that the Civil Liberties Union has already caught the drift, if you will, Mr. Allen, of what's at play here. And I got to tell you that Major League All-Star Game, we will not be welcome in downtown Minneapolis. So when you talk in terms of making a mistake of wearing some Army fatigues, though Mr. Allen served with honor and distinction in the Armed Forces of the United States a decade ago, you may be declared persona non grata.
Oh, yeah. But you know what? It's very interesting, Mr. Edwards, because I sat in the meeting when I was the second vice president of the Minneapolis NAACP, where we met with the ACLU, where they sent attorneys out to try to get a buy-in on this,
mm-hmm.
and I'm actually looking at a story here that was posted because I remember seeing this, and it says that they did file a suit, but the American Civil Liberties Union dropped the civil lawsuit Wednesday against the city of Minneapolis after the city council changed the motion they wrote last month that put restrictions on license and permits in Minneapolis by the days leading up to the Major League Baseball game. That was just one of the many things that they did. Because, you know, the city council tried to, jam some folks up. Like, he couldn't come down there and sell nothing. People, they weren't giving out permits. You
That's
know,
right.
only if you were on that special list. You know, that
mm-hmm.
only a God and a few people know about. So,
but let me say this, Mr. Allen, and in all fairness to the African-American community, our community, that's not what the reasons are, as young African Americans are being stopped over the last couple of weeks in prelude to the full initiation of the clean zones. You know, they're not being stopped because they are vendors illegally selling ice cream and fruit punch and et cetera. They're being stopped because they're black. Okay.
Yeah. Bottom line.
Yeah. Bottom line. So maybe someone can explain to them, you know what I mean, why it is that they are being declared persona. I use this word again for our legal friends, persona non grata, if you will, and are being trespassed. In fact, it's gotten so heavy that one of the things that's come out is that at North Commons Park and to some degree Martin Luther King Park, young black folks are being trespassed out of the park. You know, the man's telling them, saying, you know, you've been walking through here too long. You know what I mean? And, you know, parks are part of recreation and et cetera, and contrary to what some of the folks that texted in last week, I guess they didn't come back this week, not every black person, you know what I'm saying, that is seen in an area is a suspect, if you will, or is persona non grata, if you will, and is to be treated as if they're a terrorist. See, that's how they should have treated the Millers out there in Las Vegas. And
uh-huh.
maybe the officers and maybe Mr. Wilcox would still be alive. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And by the way, at some point, we're going to have a discussion in America about what to do about a white population that is mentally deficient and out of control.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, since we last came together, we had the three individuals shot and killed in Vegas. We had a young man shot and killed and then a suicide at Reynolds High School in Troutdale, Oregon, just east of Portland, Oregon. I don't know when we're going to have a national discussion about the problem of mental health and decadence, if you will, within white America. I mean, I mm-hmm. think that's a fair discussion, don't you, Mr. Allen?
Yeah, that is a real fair discussion. I would agree 100%.
Yeah.
You know, the shootings in Seattle not too long ago here?
Just at the same time last week, all a part of that pattern. It's kind of like Hollywood where, you know, you talk about deaths come in threes. it appears that terrorist attacks are basically coming in threes, you know.
I
just find it amazing that every time now that there is a white terrorist who opens fire and kills, be it 1, 2, 5, 10, 15, that he always has a mental health problem. And mommy and daddy were just working on it, but uh-huh. didn't quite get him the kind of attention that he needed. And I got to tell you, the texts and messages I'm getting from my Billy Bob friends up there in Idaho, up there around Priest River, mm-hmm. and their training grounds up there, I just cannot understand what as much monitoring that the NSA is doing of phone calls, transmissions, and et cetera, that they didn't pick up. But contrary to what Cleve Bundy and his buddies out there in Nevada said, the Millers were, quote-unquote, well-coordinated by Mr. Bundy and his group of anti-government separatists, if you will. See, the certain names aren't applied in this country to white folks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah,
not at all.
Yeah. Cleve Bundy, millionaire, man who owes the federal government $1 million. He's feeding on government land, getting his cattle fat. In fact, we should find out who the companies are that are buying his cattle, and there should be a boycott of everything that they sell, be it Sam, Spam, or whatever else. You know what I mean? It's outrageous, you know. But
yeah.
Billy Bob has sent word. They said the revolution has started, and at some point there will be a whole group of people, including immigrants, who will become targets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Edwards, it looks like we have to wrap up the show right
okay,
here.
Okay, got to wrap it up, Don. All right. We'll be back next week. We appreciate the callers, political candidates, our callers from the East Coast and et cetera. And, you know, maybe what we should do is just offer a prayer for the black communities of Minnesota.
Yeah, I agree. Talk to you next week.
All right, Mr. Edwards.
Bring it home.